Chapter 2, Surrounded by Stuff, Nerves, and More Shame. The story, Rachel. Note, all story characters are fictional. Rachel, a work outside the home mother of two, ushered me into her living room, self-consciously scooping up the school paper and cereal bowl fallout left from that morning, and shifting a stack of books off the couch so I could have a place to sit. Rachel was nervous. Fluttery, I sometimes call it, because that's how it looks. Like a butterfly that just got disturbed by a curious toddler. She was hyper aware of why I was there. She did invite me, after all, but I was probably the first person outside of her family that she had invited into her home in over a year. She was desperate to have a more tranquil, organized lifestyle, but she recently changed jobs and had to help her aging mother move out of her childhood home and into an Alzheimer's care facility 6 months before. Her garage was filled with furniture and memories that she couldn't bring herself to make decisions about at that time. Her house was filled with other items she couldn't seem to make decisions about either. Every time she thought she had a handle on things, something else popped up to derail her. Her spouse had not been particularly supportive. In his defense, he worked long hours, focused on getting school loans paid off. And although he thought she should just use her time more wisely and start picking up more, he did agree to her seeking some outside help. We talked a bit so that she could settle and quit worrying about what I was thinking, and truly, I didn't think anything. I have a state of mind that I shift into when I walk into a disorganized situation that I can only describe as my robot mode, making observations and mental notes, but not caring on any sort of emotional or judgmental level that the countertops aren't visible or that there are unopened shopping bags piled in the corner or that there's pet hair and Cheerios here and there on the floor. I was there to listen, assess, and support her in figuring out how to move forward. We have so much to contend with in our 21st century lives. It's not fresh news that we are surrounded by the consequences of working more, buying more, committing to more. There are many reasons I started helping people with their surroundings in 2012, but I have to give partial credit to one book that inspired me to become an organizer. The title might surprise you, Little House in the Big Woods by Laura Ingalls Wilder. I mean, the book perhaps romanticizes a pretty rough 19th century lifestyle, but when I was a kid, I read it over and over again. I was fascinated with the differences between life in the 1800s and my own. As I read it to our own daughter in her elementary years, a new observation blew me away when I reread the passages about preparations for winter. Wilder describes in fine detail her mother gathering and storing the root vegetables in the cellar. Ma Ingalls organized onions and peppers and hung them in their attic, separating them from the categorized groupings of other staples. The pantry had plenty of cured items and cheeses to get them through until spring. Following that description comes the tale of the butchering of the hog, both a community social event and a necessary methodical process in which no part of the animal was wasted. Even the bladder was blown up and used as a toy, the tail fried as a special once-a-year treat for the little Ingallses, and of course, Jack, the bulldog. Here's what struck me. Planning for winter, organizing supplies, and preparing ahead of time for the Ingalls family was not a productivity hack, but a tool necessary for survival. Sure, there were limited resources, which in turn limited choices. Who knows how things might have been different if Pa had been a railroad baron instead of a homesteader. Still, nothing was overlooked, mindlessly discarded, or unnecessarily purchased. Essential items were arranged in such a way that nothing would go missing. I don't recall any descriptions of Mary misplacing her school books or Ma purchasing extra calico only to find a big stash already in the cedar chest. Delayed gratification was a given. not something they had to consciously teach in a world filled with one-click purchases. Now, most of our complaints and struggles in getting ready for winter involve things like whether or not the kids have outgrown their coats, or if the in-laws are showing up for the holidays, or maybe whether we have to cut back a little to keep the credit card bill down. I think even as a kid, I must have subconsciously admired and wanted to somehow emulate the survival skill organizational doctrine of Ma Ingalls, minus living in rural Minnesota. Let's get back to our mom, Rachel. Rachel was a paralegal, very well respected, and could hold things together pretty well at her new job. When she came home, she would fall apart because she felt safer letting her normal mode of being scattered manifest itself. Plus, between work, family, and her mother, she was exhausted. As Rachel's children moved out of elementary and into middle school, contrary to her expectations, they seemed to require more of her time than when they were totally dependent upon her. When they started school, she went back to work. But then came the extracurriculars and the pressure to make sure her kids kept up with the pack. There was also the homework that occasionally required her assistance, the signing of forms, the checks and fees for various items, the discussions about friends and insecurity and life. She was routinely asked to volunteer for school events, and she tried to, as much as possible. That's what good moms do, right? She also underestimated the energy assisting her mother would take away from her on a daily basis. She was surrounded by choices and commitments that seemed to constantly limit her potential in the home. She rarely said no. Whether parents should work or stay at home, or some combination of the two, is such an individual decision and so different for every family's situation. I acknowledge that for many of us, it's a fact of life we have to contend with. But when we commit to it, something, or several somethings, has to give. And many times it ends up being the organization, time management, and overall internal efficiency of the household. When the house falls into disorder, you might feel guilty and incompetent. You look the other way from the ever-growing piles of mail, and you don't let the kids have their friends over, never mind whether or not you have any friends. Stepping back from the scene, you might not recognize that you aren't the only one dealing with this kind of chaos. It's way more common than you think. Sooner or later, the dust settles. You look around and, holy crap, there is stuff. Papers, pet toys, spare change, bottles of sunscreen, party favors, clothing that still has tags, 10 boxes of light bulbs, permanent markers, etc., 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 everywhere. Did you need all of this? Did you buy something because you couldn't find the something you already had? And then when the soccer practice gets canceled and you have to leave work early to pick your child up, it blows up the time you thought you had to get the basics of organization handled. This unbalanced lifestyle is a long way from the big woods, or maybe even from the lifestyle of your parents or grandparents. You don't have to worry about surviving a Minnesota winter sans electricity in 1882, but couldn't you be living a little easier? What mental skills did we trade off when rushing to the grocery store or whizzing through a drive-thru replaced butchering the hog and drying the veggies? Fast solutions don't always serve us particularly well when we have to deal with the big stuff, the scary things, like suddenly having to care for a parent, deal with a job loss, or navigate a divorce. In survival mode, we very often don't have time or mental space to plan ahead. We don't have much to fall back on to help us maintain our balance. And what good does being nervous and embarrassed about our homes do for us? I took a very informal poll online about getting ready for guests in the home. 16.5% of participants in the survey would not invite someone into their home for dinner due to the stress involved. As I talked to Rachel, I realized that statistic rang pretty true for her. Sadly, disconnection compounded the problem. She had lost her way with the baseline organizational practices that she thought everyone else had all figured out, and it was nerve-wracking to think about anyone else seeing her spaces. Work-life balance was not on her radar at this stage of life, and I just wanted to give her a hug and tell her it was all okay. I didn't, because I didn't want to freak her out even more, but I did explain to her that it was not surprising that she got swept away by her circumstances, and that it would be possible to break through and regain the skills needed to manage her home more effectively. Rachel had lots of thoughts and doubts swimming around in her brain. She hadn't previously considered the impact of her life events on her clutter. She wondered all sorts of things out loud as we walked and talked through her spaces. Should I have bought some more bins? The answer was no. Will I have to let go of a lot of stuff? That depends. What about this room over here? If I get organized, what if I can't stay organized? The last one is a perfect question because backsliding happens all the time. Developing the ability to maintain doesn't happen overnight or by reading a 2-minute article titled 10 Quick Ways to Be Organized. You can learn to be more organized, but it will likely take some time and experimentation until you can figure out systems that work specifically for you. Actually, I believe that's what you must do for long-term success, because organization is not one size fits all. Did Ma Ingalls organize her attic just like all the other frontier women? Did she take time to store vegetables cleverly and in rainbow order? I suspect she utilized a combination of following her own mother's lead, recognizing what worked for her family, and a healthy dose of intuition. Where's our intuition when it comes to creating order for ourselves? Part of my job is assuring people that there is always a way forward for anyone, no matter how far down they've gone, to improve their organization. So, after Rachel shared her story, I asked her which area was giving her the most heartburn. She had no idea. "Please fix everything," she said quietly. Using my own intuition, I suggested that we move into the mudroom by the back door. We started to sort the shoes, backpacks, and school paperwork, and began the slow but steady process of making some sense of it all. The subplot, my first cycle class. I was pretty nervous because I signed up for this intro to cycling class at the gym we belong to. I figured I needed to get a better level of fitness before I headed out onto the open road. Actually, it was kind of an excuse to not get out on the open road, but you know, baby steps. My husband, Jeff, and I had gone out the night before to get the requisite padded bike tights. Those things are not flattering. I was perplexed about whether or not I needed the shoes with those clip things, so we decided I should wing it and wear my regular cross-training shoes. I had been making some feeble attempts at working out, but I knew I was not in fabulous shape. I had been heavy into doing this entrepreneur thing, I reasoned. I confessed to myself that I was worried about what the instructor and other attendees would think. My heart rate increased just contemplating walking into the room. I had been researching group rides and training programs in the area. Jeff was eager to assist, and I appreciated his support, but I wasn't sure about how I felt about his advice. At this point, I had no clue where this journey was going. I hadn't fleshed out how I wanted things to be. I just knew that I wanted to not be terrified on a bike. I was sure he had lofty plans for me, but the metric century idea comes along much later in this story. I did think I needed a big, scary goal to shoot for, something that would push me and get me outside my comfort zone, something that would teach me some lessons I'd either forgotten or never learned in the first place. I was leaning toward a 50-mile ride that coincided with my upcoming 50th birthday. Was it synchronicity or a sign? It seemed insurmountable with so many years between me and a bike. I felt more than a little awkward and ridiculous that riding a bike seemed like such a scary goal. When I was a little kid and learned how to ride my first small bike, I have a vague recollection of this. My dad took off the training wheels and, holding the back of the seat, ran along behind me as I pedaled. I have no clue when his hand finally came off and I found balance on my own, but then I just rode. In rain, in heat, up and down the street in front of our house, without any sort of self-consciousness. It was that simple, and it was instinctive. When our own children learned how to ride, and how ironic is it that I helped them to learn, it was a similar experience. Other than the bikes and their helmets, we didn't buy anything special. I didn't even have a helmet when I learned. Now, when it's a little hot or cold outside, we all head to the gym for cycling class, complete with heart rate monitors and weird shoes. I often tell clients that they cannot buy their way into better organization. Having cool organizing stuff is fun, but it can't make decisions or take donations to the thrift store for them. And the same principle applies to cycling. There's a great book out there that helped me put some of the learning to ride process into a more realistic perspective. It's called Just Ride by Grant Peterson, and I highly recommend it for anyone wanting to get out more on a bike. It's a no-frills, get-busy-and-do-it manual that does a nice job of dispelling some myths about cycling, like the idea that you have to have certain equipment or a special wardrobe. I wish I'd found it much earlier in this journey. I never wanted to get caught up in following what everyone else is doing because, frankly, I can't do what everyone else does. If I could, I wouldn't be writing this story. But I wasn't even close to actually riding the bike at this point. I arrived at the class early, as always. The cycling class instructor was very understanding when I gave her a few details about my situation. She was helpful and sympathetic to my plight. I relaxed, just a bit. She appeared to have never had any issues with either gaining muscle mass or building her cardio, but she listened carefully to my goals and she helped me to have some hope. There was no pressure or judgment. She assisted me in setting the seat level and adjusting the height and distance of the bars. Shoes with clips might have been helpful, but were definitely not essential. I bravely hopped on the bike, determined to follow her every step. I had so much to remember and focus on. I mentally beat myself up a few times before class started, just for good measure. Others entered the room and I instantly felt like I was being assessed. I was feeling awkward and weak and totally out of familiar territory, but I managed to get started. It was difficult for me to grasp how this experience might help me achieve my goal, so I simply clung to whatever the instructor shouted into her mic as the music cranked up. I kept my eyes forward. And I spoke to no one. I survived, but I was still pretty distrustful of myself. I hoped nobody was paying attention to me or noticing that I wasn't always turning up the tension knob when I was supposed to. I also couldn't stop thinking that even though the class was good for me, it wasn't the same as actually riding a bike on a road. Pedaling to nowhere in a dark room led by someone shouting through a headset over the bass turned up to 11 might help me get those quads up to speed, but it was a far cry from my original vision for riding a bike. How would I ever make the connection? Could I make the switch to the real thing? It was a start. I made a plan to keep going. Scribble. What do you hide due to disorganization? When was the last time you followed your instincts about where to store something or whether or not to discard something? What makes you nervous about letting others in on your organizing challenges?